This is 91.3 KUAF, your radio home for NPR programs and NPR news for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later on today's show, John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, talks with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics about violence and discord in Virginia this weekend, the president's response, and more. That conversation in about 20 minutes on today's show. First, we remember one of the most influential Arkansans on the state's identity, Frank Broyles. The former head coach and athletic director at the University of Arkansas died yesterday at the age of 92. His successes in the athletic realm can be measured in conventional manner. The football program's only national championship, 207 wins against 144 losses in 19 years as the Razorback head coach. In his second act at the University of Arkansas, he led a department that established a track and field team that amassed more national championships than any other collegiate program. And he hired coaches that would bring national prominence to basketball, baseball, tennis, and golf programs. All of this at a land-grant university in a small, poor state, becoming the leading figure to construct a program that would house athletics in some of the best arenas on the college landscape. Later, he would lead a public effort to better understand Alzheimer's and would work to eliminate the stigma the disease carried for some. He wrote the book Playbook for Alzheimer's Caregivers to offer guidance for those caring for a loved one with the disease. He wrote the book after spending years with his first wife, Barbara, as she lived with Alzheimer's. As he had done as a coach and athletic director, he became a national figure in the discussion. This is from the nationally syndicated Dr. Phil program.
Some of the things you talk about here, you say, number one, you got to make their world really simple.
We must remember that Alzheimer's patients, you're doing something with them. It's social. It's not a medical. It's all social. But you have to be creative to keep a calm.
Well, give me an example when you had to be creative.
Well, it had to be creative when she would say she wanted to go home and see her mother. I want to go home and see my mother. Please take me home to see my mother's been deceased. So you don't say your mother's not here, because then she goes into a behavioral pattern, may want to hit you or leave the house or whatever. So you say to her, your mother has gone to a party. She'll be back tonight. You'll be able to see. We're going to have a good time right now. We're going to play cards and watch TV, and then we'll see your mother tonight. 1 minute later, she's forgotten that. So that's what we call creative.
Yeah. So,
That the coach would understand the way to make his wife feel better, guide her, isn't surprising. During his time as a head football coach, he guided players and younger coaches who were his assistants, who would all later become head coaches themselves, winning multiple college national championships and 6 Super Bowls. Every year, the top assistant coach in college football is given the Broyles Award. There were other feats. For years, he teamed with Keith Jackson on ABC as the most watched college football announcing team in the country.
I wish we could see what happened, whether he came clean or whether they had a stunt. Georgia man. One, two,
he's a reserve linebacker.
And the kicker took 3 long steps, Keith, and he didn't get the ball high. A freshman kicker kicking in his first game. I don't know whether we can run that back again.
Among those he coached is Arkansas Senator John Bozeman. Yesterday, the senator released a statement saying outside of his family, perhaps nobody had a bigger influence on his life than Frank Broyles. Broyles was a visionary. He helped set the table for future financial stability for the Arkansas program by leading the school into the Southeastern Conference and away from the historic but vulnerable Southwest Conference and its otherwise all-Texas membership. In a 1992 interview on this program, he explained his thoughts on moving into the SEC.
We're at the crossroads, and we're going through a transition. The transition into the Southeastern Conference won't take place in 1 year. It'll be a 5-year period. And 5 years down the road, it will be determined whether it was a good move or not, and it will be determined by the fact that we are a competitive program against all of these teams, or we're a stepping stone. That's what we're looking into the future and hope that we'll be a very strong competitive rival. Nothing is ever in place, and you never let time run its course at your station or in any business. We're always trying to improve. Competition's improving, always working to better your situation. We'll continue to try to strengthen all of our sports. We've got a considerable amount of capital improvements to be made to be competitive. Some of our facilities are shoddy compared to the SEC, so we've got some work to be done there. But We're going to try to improve. Nothing's in place. We've got to get better and better each year.
As people remember Frank Broyles, we hear and read stories of the man beyond the coach and administrator. Yesterday, Harry King, a longtime sports writer, told Michael Hiblin from our partner station KUAR in Little Rock that King's most cherished moment of Frank Broyles was after one of the most heartbreaking losses of the coach's career, when Texas defeated Arkansas in what is known as the Great Shootout in Fayetteville in 1969.
In 69, they lost the national championship, what turned out to be the national championship game to Texas. And I was on the sidelines working for the Associated Press at the time, and it was a crushing defeat. Led 14-0, lost 15-14. And when he came off the field, his daughters, twin daughters, were on each side of him crying their eyes out, and he was comforting them when he had to have suffered the most difficult loss to deal with. That's an image I have. And that evening, he hosted members of the media at his house.
He was personable, sometimes surprisingly so, for a man who was arguably the most recognizable person inside the state's borders for years. In 1988, when I was news director at Kix 104 Radio, I wanted a quick soundbite from somebody in the athletic department about a change in ticketing policy or some such story. In the middle of the day, I called the athletic department hoping for a standard quip from some official. Frank Broyles answered the phone. This wasn't his phone, but the general line. I expressed my surprise that he, the big boss there, answered the call directly. He chuckled and explained that often during the lunch hour, he might be the only person in that side of the building. A building with his name on it, by the way. So he took the calls. It still makes me smile to think some days a man or woman in, say, Monticello or Mark Tree called to inquire about tickets to the Tulsa game and ended up talking to the architect of the program. It wasn't always easy. Hiring coaches means firing coaches, and a small state that probably values our college sports a bit too much can pay too much attention to such comings and goings. And the splits didn't always end well or elegantly. The lasting memories of Frank Broyles, though, are of a man who adopted this state, took over a football program that had finished better than fourth in the Southwest Conference just twice between 1938 and 1957, and made it a powerhouse. He understood the capacity of media and helped develop the statewide radio network that still broadcasts Razorback sports to all 75 counties. And maybe most importantly to those of us not in his family or among his associates and friends, he was able to build a strong identity for Arkansans who had long suffered a communal inferiority complex from the national images of hillbillies and of Governor Faub as standing in the way of social justice. Frank Broyles moved to Arkansas in 1957 and only left this week, leaving so much better than when he arrived. This week, the students at the Arkansas College of Osteopathic Medicine are in the third week of classes, research, and study. This summer, we've talked with Kyle Parker, the president and CEO of the Arkansas Colleges of Health Education, about the development of the college. Last week, we spent an afternoon at the Fort Smith campus to find out how a new college is built from the ground up in 2016 and 2017. Kyle Parker says there is plenty of top-tier technology and recruited faculty at the campus, but he says one of the most important facets of the college is the idea behind learning, team-based learning with a Helix model approach.
So during the early part of the week, they'll be into doing their biomedical studies. And then towards the end of the week, they'll move them over to the clinical side. So they get to understand that, you know, I've studied this particular thing, whether it's biochem, pathology, pharmacology, whatever it is, and I'm getting the rudimentary understanding of what of this particular subject matter, then I go over and talk to the practicing physicians, and they put that into a practical application by saying, this is why you have learned this earlier in the week, and so what it does is it gives the students a jump start.
Kyle Parker says recent studies indicate students may struggle in one particular subject, but collectively, a student body can be better than the individual decision of one student. Certainly, technology can assist in team education more than ever before. A corridor on the first floor is a stunning example. 20 rooms, each with a camera and screen.
The professor can give them a common problem, gets to be able to view all of them via camera, can tie any room together they want to get them on the same projects together. And so they come up with a group answer. They're also, they're individually tested, but they're also group tested. And they do debriefings from this. So the instructor gets to see the student. And if you have a student that's very quiet, reserved, not saying anything, well, that's okay in one sense, but when they get ready to walk into the clinic and they're one-on-one with that patient, you want them to have the confidence to come forward and to discuss things subjectively, objectively, and the assessments or whatever.
One large classroom allows professors to take advantage of what can be done with wires, computers, and images.
This has the ability to go to full 3D in here, so we could literally, when they push a button, everything is controlled with a technology, it's called Crestron, where it dims the lights and it starts things up for you automatically at the push of a button. But it could literally take let's say that you had a leg that you're wanting to study with all the muscles, it could literally look like it's floating in the air and they spin it around and stuff, so you can see it at all different angles.
All of these rooms can communicate with each other. Each class is recorded and can be replayed from any of the study rooms or even in a student's apartment so that student can review what was taught earlier that day or earlier in the semester. The path from classroom to clinic or hospital covers more than just tests, however. There's one space that has carpet that can't be stained, and that's for a certain reason.
Part of being a physician is somebody will come into a clinic, they're sick, they don't feel well, and they may vomit.
Yeah.
And so the students need to get used to those events taking place. There may be a lot of blood involved. They come in from a car accident, it's an emergency room situation. So we will literally bring the students in here and set up fake vomit, blood getting thrown on you. You don't have the ability to react and go, oh, gee, this is awful, how sick. You've got to work through it.
And one stairwell up. The atmosphere shifts from state-of-the-art classrooms to a replica of a 21st century hospital that is home to 8 expensive, lifelike mannequins. These permanent patients can mimic almost any condition young medical professionals may face. The eyes on the mannequins open and shut. The chest rises and falls.
You can see him breathing. We can check his heart rate. We can have him have a heart attack. He'll talk to you. He can cry. He can bleed. We can run central lines into him and literally mimic any condition known to mankind. We can disarticulate him, have him start bleeding out, so that we have to come back in here and literally put the tourniquets on him to get the blood stopped.
One of the mannequins is a mother in labor, complete with newborn with readable vital signs. But for an experience that is even more realistic, local residents, actors, come into the college building to give the students an actual breathing patient to discuss possible medical conditions with. Kyle Parker, the president and CEO of the college, says the exercise allows for medical investigative skills to sharpen and bedside manner approaches to develop.
You have one person that's sitting over there on the side and not saying anything. We need to bring them out of that shell so that they can talk to this patient. Because so much we're finding in healthcare is that if the patient truly believes that doctor cares, and we're teaching them to care, they get much better results. They tend to follow the directions much better.
Research is also part of the college's mission. Published faculty have been hired and continue to work on those efforts on the Fort Smith campus.
These guys can practice anywhere they want to in the world, but they believed in our mission. We pay national wages. They found out that Arkansas is very inexpensive living, and they decided to join this team.
Beyond the technology, there is a holistic approach to all things related to the education experience. An anonymous gift in excess of $300,000 allowed for the purchase of sculpture, painting, and photography throughout the college, all created by Arkansas and regional artists. And there's another mission, to keep many of these students in Arkansas, a state where medical access can be limited for many rural residents. A collection of large photographs of places in Arkansas is in one of the main classrooms, and that collection's accompanied by geocodes.
So that if our students have time, they can type that in, and then they will be able to use their GPS and go to these locations in the state.
Even though the college is in its infancy, there are scores of clinics working with the campus that will host the students as they begin clinical rotations 2 years from now. A map on the third floor holds pushpins for every clinic in Arkansas and Oklahoma where ARCOM students will be soon.
However, Oklahoma is not up to date, and there's still 110 community health centers that we have just recently signed an affiliation agreement with that those pushpins are not in there. So there's well over 200 facilities that our students will be able to go into.
And there's another map, this one in Kyle Parker's office. It's a picture of the present acreage owned by the college. Pointing at different locations on the photo, Kyle Parker explains the next steps for the Arkansas Colleges of Health Education in Fort Smith. He sees a campus of academic buildings, residences, parks, and businesses.
We're looking for people to walk along and say hello to somebody that they're crossing with, and then to say, where would you like to eat tonight? Well, tonight I would like to have a hamburger, a pizza, or Tex-Mex, what have you. Make those decisions later. And then to say, well, let's walk around a little bit. Let's see if there's anybody out here playing near the park. Maybe they're throwing a baseball. Let's go watch that a little bit. Are you still hungry? Yeah, you know, I could handle an ice cream. Well, let's kind of walk over there to the ice cream. Did you remember to deposit things in the bank? Let's step right next door. That's what we're trying to get done because it's a healthier lifestyle.
Kyle Parker is the president and CEO of the Arkansas Colleges of Health Education. He led us on a tour of the new Arkansas College of Osteopathic Medicine last week. The first class of students at the college began their work July 31st. You can find out more at the Arkansas Colleges of Health Education website, achee.edu.org.
Zambia's government had an idea to fight poverty, just give people cash. But there were plenty of skeptics.
People would say, you're just putting money into a bottomless pit. Maybe they will use it for beer and it won't be put to good use.
Now that experiment is one of the most successful cash aid programs today. How cash can change lives. Plus all the latest news on the next Morning Edition.
Tomorrow morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3. And later on this show, how to integrate the eclipse into the school day.
We're doing various things. We're trying to find, looking at the schedule so we can adjust lunches and things like that a little bit if we need to in order to be able to get everybody outside. Of course, the big thing is weather. So you never know what weather you're going to get. If it's a day like today, then it's not going to do us much good.
The Rogers Public Library is holding Geek Event Saturday. It's an all-day program highlighting library services, technology, and community organizations that provide various services to the Northwest Arkansas region, including information on tutoring services, 3D printing, local authors, and after-school activities. For more information, rogerspubliclibrary.org. You can join the Berryville Community Center Saturday from 1 to 5 for free, family-friendly events organized by the Carroll and Madison County Library System. Way to go, libraries. There will be a discussion about the science of the sun in preparation for the solar eclipse on Monday. Visitors will receive a free pair of eclipse viewing glasses. For more on the free event, you can go online to eurekalibrary.org or you can call old school 253-8754. And the Flower Garden and Nature Society of Northwest Arkansas will meet Saturday at 10 in the morning to hear Kitty Sanders speak about monarchs, the poster child of butterflies. Kitty is a Washington County Master Gardener. Meetings are held in the Student Center of Northwest Technical Institute in Springdale. Social time begins at 9:30 in the morning. Membership not required for first-time visitors. You can search Facebook for more information or call 466-7625.
What does this song have in common with California Dreaming by the Mamas and the Papas? You've Got Me, Babe by Sonny and Cher? The iconic Beach Boys album Pet Sounds? Or even Bob Dylan's Mr. Tambourine Man? All of these songs were played by a group of session musicians who came to be known as the Wrecking Crew. On this week's KUAF Vinyl Hour, we listen to songs that feature the Wrecking Crew, perhaps the greatest group of session musicians ever assembled. And we remember one particular Wrecking Crew member who passed away last week, Arkansas's own Glenn Campbell. That's this week on the KUAF Vinyl Hour, Sunday night at 5 p.m. on KUAF 3.
91.3 KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive, collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Cherishing Children Dinner and Awards Presentation is September 21st at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. Supporters, guests, and those working with abuse victims are invited. This evening will include an inspiring message from guest speaker Lucille O'Neill, mother of Shaquille O'Neill. Tickets and information at cacbentonco.com or 621-0385.
Such is the 2017 news cycle that the topic Roby Brock and John Brummett think they'll discuss changes in a brief amount of time. For their conversation this week, they spent late last week thinking of the clashing of words between North Korea and the United States and the concern some have over the possibility of nuclear war. By the time they sat down yesterday, the conversation had inched more toward discussion of domestic civil unrest.
So let's begin with the controversy over the weekend of the violence in Charlottesville from the rallies that were there. The president has come under tremendous fire for this statement. "We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides." The "on many sides" there. What are the sides?
Well, he said on many sides, and then he said again on many sides. And you'll find with this president that when he says something more than once, he's doubling down on his inanity. That's basically what he's doing. As if he says it more than once, it'll be somehow less inane. Here are the sides. You have neo-Nazis, white supremacists, white nationalists, racists, anti-Semites, heavily armed, taking to the street, doing Nazi salutes, saying that black lives don't matter. On the other side, you have counter-protesters saying black lives do matter. What the President of the United States did was get on the wrong side of World War II, find it impossible to attack by name or denounce by name neo-Nazis, and equate those who say black lives don't matter with those taking to the street to say black lives do. That's what we have. We have a president of the United States who we could not have predicted this 2 years ago, 18 months ago, who is allied with a Russian dictator and defensive about neo-Nazis. That's what we've got. And well, go ahead and ask.
But we knew going into this presidency, and people said as they left the voting booth in November that they knew what they were getting when they elected this president. And this is not new. If you look at the list of people that he has offended over the course of the campaign, this is not the first time that he's been on the wrong side of what should be some pretty easy history.
You know, I'm not prepared to say that the 46% of Americans who voted for Trump did so because they wanted to have, they wanted to party like Germans in 1934. I'm not prepared to say that. I think he got to 46% because the Democrats had a weak candidate, because his general message, make America great again and bring back jobs, prevailed in certain key geographic areas, producing an electoral majority. These are creepy fringe people who did not deliver his victory, but who have been emboldened by his rhetoric, yes, his repeated rhetoric, to come out of the shadows and parade in public. I believe Trump was motivated in his timid, tepid response over the weekend by political defensiveness. I think he knows people are blaming him for that rhetoric. You had people out there with Confederate flags and Make America Great Again caps, and he wants to defend him. His ego is such and his political consideration is such that he wants to defend himself against this charge that they're there because of his emboldening them. So he won't even acknowledge that they're different from other groups. I don't defend all the tactics, or obviously, of some of these emerging alternative left groups. I don't, and we shouldn't. But they were counter, they were responding. The central issue were these right-wing, anti-American, neo-Nazi thugs. And our president, if he wants to attack the others and criticize them, okay, but at least first say that this is un-American, that we denounce this kind of thing and that it's dangerous, and he could not bring himself to say it. And it was so egregious that every Republican in sight came out of the woodwork to say, Mr. President, say what this is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Orrin Hatch, my brother didn't die fighting Nazis for us to tolerate Nazi thought in this country. And so that's, I think of all the weekly egregious things about this presidency that has had me on here holding forth, this one takes the rottenest cake I have ever
seen. Saying a lot, because there's a lot of rotten cake you've.
Let me tell you, if you get on the wrong side, if you get on the wrong side of fascism, that's bad. Mm-hmm. That's beyond most things.
Is this problem, this issue, going to come to Arkansas in a visible way? We have a Confederate soldier statue on the lawn of the Arkansas State Capitol. The Bentonville Town Square, where there was a rally on Sunday, has a Confederate statue in the middle of it right there. Are we going to see something comparable
I do not
here
wish,
in Arkansas?
Roby, I don't wish to invite this kind of trouble. I mean, if somebody wants to make that trouble, they can make it. I'm not going to predict it. I'm not going to sound an alarm about it. I'm going to tell you, this thing was not at all about the Lee statue. That was an excuse for these people to come out and show off what David Duke plainly said was their Trump bona fides. We're here to do Trump's mission and take America back. That statue was merely an excuse. I'm not going to... I perish the thought that this spreads. We have extreme right-wing groups in this state. Mm-hmm. We do. We have more than our share of them, and there are pockets where they some of their organizational centers are. But I'm too fearful and dreadful of that spreading generally and certainly to my home state to even speculate. I really am.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can also read his columns at ArkansasOnline.com, including a Wednesday-only web column. He talked with Roby Brock. Roby is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. There's more to their conversation, including discussion about the possible candidates for Little Rock mayor, available right now at TalkBusiness.net. Also at TalkBusiness.net, around-the-clock service, covering the news and events of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large.
With the Department of Arkansas Heritage, I'm Mark Crist of the Arkansas World War I Centennial Commemoration Committee. 100 years ago, in the summer of 1917, Arkansas's women were diligently making items for military hospitals in Europe. In the meantime, the head of the Red Cross Commission in France cabled the American Red Cross Women's Bureau to report an imperative need before Christmas for knitted sweaters, socks, mufflers, and wristlets for all the men in the trenches during the harsh French winter. After consulting with authorities from the British, Canadian, and French Red Cross, as well as knitting experts from women's magazines and commercial mills, the Bureau issued 500,000 circulars with simple directions for knitting the 4 most needed items. By late August, the Women's Bureau sent a rush order to Arkansas's workrooms. The letter requested that workrooms engaged in making surgical supplies switch immediately to knitting clothing articles. Women who were not part of an organized workroom were asked to knit according to the Red Cross instructions published in the newspaper. To learn more, visit ww1arkansas.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Catherine Sherrill, our militant grammarian, is with us inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thanks. Well, today we're returning to the little booklet I found titled Advanced Grammar. It was published in 1980 by William Leahy.
And it I recall from last week, it looks like it was made in 1960, just the font or whatever. It's no bigger than like one of those booklets you use to study for your driver's test.
Yeah. Do they still have small booklets?
Oh, I don't know.
Who knows?
It's no bigger than the booklets were in the early 1980s.
Right. Well, under a heading called Point of View, Leahy outlined several rules warning us to stay in one lane. Speaking of driving, when we're riding. Don't shift from one lane to another without good reason. For instance, we know
I feel like we're talking about driving tests.
I know it.
Yes,
that's
okay.
True.
Always look in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Yes.
For instance, we know that a pronoun must agree with its antecedent. They agree in number, gender, and person. So what does number refer to?
Well, whether it's a singular or plural.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
What does gender refer to?
Male, female, or neither.
Yeah, and I tried to find, I thought there was a specific word for its, mm-hmm. what kind of pronoun it is, and neutral is as close as I could come. It didn't really seem. And, of course, when you look that up, if you Google that, mm-hmm. most of what you get now is a person who doesn't want to identify as either gender.
Oh, right.
And there's long discussions about that. So, all right, what about person? Do you know that one?
First person, second person, third person.
Right.
Me,
okay.
I, you,
yeah.
he, her.
Oh, okay. The rule is the same person of pronouns should be maintained in sentences and paragraphs. Do not shift from one class of person to another. So here's the sentence. A parent should love all his children, and you should let them know. So what's the problem there?
I don't like that sentence at all. not that a parent shouldn't love their
children. Right.
I love the sentiment. A parent should love...
So what's the, well, they've got two clauses there, right?
It says, I'm looking at the written version, a parent mm-hmm. should love all of his children. Well, a parent can be a his or a her.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about today. And I didn't catch that because I'm from very old school when I was taught to do that, even though I try not to.
Very patriarchal, if you ask me. I think that's a problem. Okay.
Two clauses.
Okay.
A parent should love all of his or her children.
Yes.
Or let's do it this way. Parents should love all their children.
Okay. Yes.
And here's another clause, mm-hmm. and you should let them know. So what's the difference there?
Well, it's just clunky because why is you there? Y-O-U.
And so what kind of problem is that?
That would be with...
Which one of those agreements?
That's a person
yeah,
problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Don't shift person.
Right. And here, you know, often people hear some of the rules we talk about and they say, oh, why does that matter? This one really matters about understanding because I didn't understand this sentence in
mm-hmm,
the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll shift, you know, without thinking. I think I don't hear it real often, but I do mm-hmm, hear it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes writers shift from one subject to another needlessly. For instance, take this sentence. Flip likes water skiing, but sailing occupies most of his time. Now, I've heard people speak like that many, many times.
Sure, sure.
So what's the problem there? Let's look at both clauses. Flip likes water skiing, but sailing occupies most of his time.
There should probably be a however or a but in there. Mm-hmm. Eh? No? Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me.
Okay. So we're talking about shifting from one subject mm-hmm. needlessly. Mm-hmm. What are the subjects? Flip likes water skiing.
That's a subject, water skiing.
Yep.
No, wait. Okay.
Who's doing the water skiing?
Oh, Flip.
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 Okay. Flip likes. Those are the subject.
I see what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Sailing occupies most of his time. What's the subject there?
Mm-hmm. Sailing.
Mm-hmm.
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 Oh.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Gotcha.
So, can you rewrite it so that Flip is the subject we substitute he in the next clause?
Flip likes water skiing, but Flip likes water skiing, but he sails more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or he spends more of his time sailing or
so
whatever.
See, there should have been a button there.
There is a button in there.
Well, now there is. Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay.
But
never
not
mind.
A however.
Right.
Which however is not equal to
yes,
but, even though
right.
we use it that way. So we got Flip likes water sailing. Sailing occupies most of his time.
Right.
So let's keep it, just keep it mm-hmm. Flip.
Okay.
And the proper way would be Flip likes water skiing, but he spends most of his time sailing or anything else
sure.
like that. Very often, a faulty sentence can be fixed by adding a pronoun, and that's kind of what happened there. Probably the most recognizable improper shift is shift in tenses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's review this, Kyle. What are the simple tenses of verbs?
Past, present, future.
There you go. So let's consider this sentence. The restaurant opens at 7 a.m. and it closed at 7 p.m.
It opens at 7, it closes at 7.
Yeah.
The polls open at 7:30. They close at 7:30, right.
And so don't shift from, in this case, present to past.
You could say the restaurant opened at 7 and mm-hmm. closed at 7.
That's right. That's right. So the same tense should be maintained in writing. Do not shift the tense of verbs needlessly. Finally, a shift in voice. Now, we talked about voice a few weeks ago, and mm-hmm. it was kind of confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the difference between active and passive voice. Can you recall what those are? Okay, which one is this? The dog bit the man.
That's passive. That's active. That's active. You people think this is easy. You come sit here.
There's something that the dog bit.
Right.
Right.
The man.
You really wouldn't say the dog bit That doesn't make sense, right?
No.
You could say the dog bites, but that's right. Different. The dog bit. You've got to have a direct object. You've got to have something that action is applied to for transitive.
Okay. Yes.
And active. Sorry, active.
Right.
The man was bitten by the dog.
That passive.
That's yes. Right. And that's okay. Why we try. And it's clunky. Yeah. So we don't try not to do that. And certainly when you're writing a compound sentence, you don't want to shift. For instance, the journalists write the gridiron script, and it was performed in October.
And that is shifting.
Right, because which one's which? The journalists write the script.
Journalists write the script is active.
That's right. And then it was performed in October.
Passive.
Right. So what you want to say is the journalist wrote the gridiron script and performed it in October. You've got both past tense.
That's the easier sentence anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. They pare it down.
You getting ready for that?
Yeah, I guess you can tell what's on my mind.
This fall, folks, this fall. Oh, our militant grammarian is Catherine Sherrills. There's an eclipse approaching. Excitement continues to build as we get closer to Monday's total solar eclipse. From kindergarten to college, local schools are organizing ways for students to experience this natural phenomenon. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Rainy days like yesterday are not ideal for viewing a total solar eclipse. Many teachers are likely crossing their fingers for good weather Monday so they can implement their plans to help their students experience this unique event. Jason Pohlmeier, principal at St. Joseph Catholic School in Fayetteville, says the school is making schedule adjustments so kids can witness the moon cover most of the sun.
We're doing various things. We're trying to find, looking at the schedule so we can adjust lunches and things like that a little bit if we need to in order to be able to get everybody outside. Of course, the big thing is weather. So you never know what weather you're going to get. If it's a day like today, then it's not going to do us much good.
Pohlmeier became aware of the solar eclipse after watching a video about it on a YouTube science channel he follows. His interest was piqued, so he started preparing over summer break by ordering eclipse glasses for the school's approximately 285 students.
I started finding resources and sending them to the teachers and hoping that they'd encouraging them to get prepared for this coming up. Since it's only a week into school, we wouldn't have a lot of time to prep for it, but we want to take advantage of it when we can.
The movement of celestial bodies is part of the school's science curriculum, so the eclipse will provide students another way to learn about this subject.
While we certainly value what the kids learning, and of course in the classroom, and prioritize that, we definitely realize that learning is much bigger than anything we're going to do in the classroom, and it's much bigger than a page in a textbook. And to be able to realize what's going on in the world is very important. To me, it would be silly to sit and look and read about an eclipse while there's one going on outside. Wouldn't make much sense educationally.
Providing education about viewing the solar eclipse safely is of particular importance for some University of Arkansas faculty and staff. The solar eclipse will occur on the first day of classes, and Mary Alice Serafini, executive director of the Pat Walker Health Center, says they want to make sure students enjoy the event safely.
One of the reasons that you have a health center on a campus is to address public health and to look out for the safety of the university community. So obviously, eye safety is a big deal when you're having an eclipse, and so we're trying to educate ourselves as well as members of our campus community about how to be safe when this wonderful eclipse happens.
Seeing an eclipse can be an experience of a lifetime, Serafini says, but it can also cause eye damage. One of the safest ways to view an eclipse is by using special glasses.
Coincidentally, the Associated Student Government is having a luncheon on the mall, the Union Mall, during the eclipse, so Merton's Eye Care and the Pat Walker Health Center will be providing those individuals who participate in that with certified eclipse glasses. And we hope that we can contribute to the safety of those individuals who want to take a look at the eclipse.
Volunteers passing out the glasses will inform students how to view the eclipse safely. Serafini says she hopes people will read up on how to experience the eclipse without damaging their eyes and share that information with others.
We hope that people will talk to their families and to one another and help one another with this, because it's not intuitive for some people. Of course, you like to look up in the sky and look at unusual things happening, but in this case, we really don't want to see damage to the retina or anybody's eyes.
For anyone interested in learning more, astronomy faculty and students will host a presentation at 4 o'clock Thursday afternoon in room 133 in the Physics Building. They have also created an informational website at uarc.libguides.com/eclipse2017. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And we're not done with the eclipse just yet. In fact, on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large, we'll explain how the Buffalo River, the nation's first national river, the upcoming total solar eclipse, and Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart, remember that song from the 80s, all have merged into one thing.
There were a few people that needed to be nudged a little bit, but I wanted to make sure that we had a pretty good representation of our staff who were included in the video. So we have a couple, actually there were four people from the interpretation division. There was one person from our facility maintenance division. We had a couple of people from law enforcement and one person from fees. So, you know, we had a pretty good representation there of people who work in our parks upper and lower district. I had to kind of beg a couple folks.
Song parody, the Buffalo River, the total eclipse, and more. And more. On tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. You can also listen to us at any time if you subscribe to our program as a podcast. It's available through free services like iTunes and Stitcher. You can also hear past shows and past individual stories by going to KUAF.com or OzarksAtLarge.com. And if you've got a smartphone or tablet that's compatible with our app, you can find more recent editions of Ozarks at Large that way as well.
On the next Fresh Air, Eric Lipton, a Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter who covers corporate agendas and government relations. He's been investigating the extent to which the regulated have become the regulators in the Trump administration. He writes about industry lobbyists who are now in senior positions at many government agencies working to roll back regulations they once fought. Join us.
Fresh Air twice every weekday on 91.3 KUAF, first at 11 a.m., then at 6 p.m.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals baseball team continues its season at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale next week with a series against the Springfield Cardinals. Tickets, game times, promotional calendar, and stats available at nwanaturals.com. Walton Arts Center presents Taj Mo, the Taj Mahal and Keb Mo Band, September 19th at 7 p.m. Iconic blues legends Taj Mahal and Keb Mo will unite for a historic collaboration to extend and expand blues traditions. Tickets at 443-5600 or waltonartscenter.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Yes, we've been talking about, and many people are very excited about, the total solar eclipse that takes place Monday afternoon. But then Tuesday morning, you wake up and you think, what's left for this week? Well, the good news is it's also next week, the Fayetteville Roots Festival. And on Friday, as part of the Roots Festival, what has now become an annual tradition, a collaboration between Ozarks at Large, 91.3 KUAF, the Fayetteville Public Library, and the Fayetteville Roots Festival, our annual live Ozarks at Large broadcast that's part of the Roots Festival. Many of the artists, not all, but many of the artists who will be playing on the main stage at the Fayetteville Town Center Friday night will be with us live on the radio. And if you choose to join us at the library, right in front of you, very intimate room, the Walker Community Room. I can tell you that some of the musicians scheduled to play live Friday, August 25th, the Honey Dewdrops, Joe Purdy, and Mandolin Orange. That's not the whole lineup, but that's part of it. And here's the best part. Absolutely free, whether you listen on air or whether you join us at the Walker Community Room at the Fayetteville Public Library. It's absolutely free, and we look forward to seeing you there or having you join us on the radio. Now, Saturday morning, there's something else that's free. This has started over the last couple of years, and we're expanding on it this year. This won't be on the radio, but it will be free, and it will be more live music at the Fayetteville Public Library. It's a Saturday morning show with four more musicians that will begin at 11 o'clock. Well, maybe 11:30. Among those musicians who will be performing, and then in between songs, talking to Brian Hembry of the Fayetteville Roots Festival and myself about how they write their songs, Blind Boy Paxton, The Stray Birds, Brother Brothers, Liza Ann. Plus, we'll also have a conversation, a live conversation with the winning chef from the cook-off competition that will have taken place on the Fayetteville Square during Saturday morning. That's Saturday. That's free as well. We will be recording it for later broadcast for Labor Day weekend, but if you'd like to see some of these great emerging artists live in person and hear what goes behind their songwriting, you can join us Saturday morning at the Fayetteville Public Library. Friday afternoon from noon to 2, live radio broadcast, all free, all available for you. That's next week as part of Ozarks at Large and the Fayetteville Roots Festival.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today we're in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio with Val Gonzalez and Jamie Ulick of Terra Studios. Guys, thanks for coming up.
Hi, we're really happy to be here.
First time for y'all on the Community Spotlight, which is actually kind of odd to say that.
Right? Yeah, we've been at KUAF a few times, but it's really nice to be in the studio with you today.
And first, I'd like to, we're going to talk about a specific event coming up in September. But first, Jamie, maybe you could kind of remind us, Terra Studios, what is it? When did it start?
Oh, Terra's been around for almost 40 years now. Terra is now a nonprofit. We turned it into a nonprofit in 2014. And we're all about art in the community. We're all about inspiring art. We're all about supporting artists. We have art classes. We have Sunday music in the gallery. We have a gallery with 120 regional artists in it. We have all kinds of things going on. Our mission is using art to create a better world, and we also are really about inspiring people to be creative. What used to be Terra was a family studio. Now it's all about how can we get the community, how can we get everybody involved in doing art and being creative.
What we're seeing is a lot more enthusiasm around creating art. We see a lot more families coming out and actually making art together. We started Art Lab a couple of years ago, and it really took off this summer. We had some interns from different universities in Arkansas, Southern Arkansas University, Arkansas Tech, University of the Ozarks. And what we saw was a lot of enthusiasm, some new installations that hopefully will be up by the time the festival comes up. But so what we're seeing is that involvement in that community atmosphere that folks are getting excited and wanting to get involved and wanting to create art and put it out there for folks. So that's been really fun. And it's really fun seeing young and coming artists and artists who've been doing this for a long time coming together and working on stuff.
This is the Fall Music and Art Festival. This is on a Sunday. That's September 10th. That's noon to 6 p.m.
This is our ninth year for the festival, but of course we've only been a nonprofit for a few years. And we've tried other things, you know, that other nonprofits do, and what we've figured out is that this is what we do well, and it brings people out to Terra to see what's new, what's changed, what's up, and folks have a lot of fun. This festival is a blast, and it's super affordable, $10 a piece. So this is our major fundraiser, and we really encourage the community to come out there and have a great time.
Guys, thanks so much for coming up and talking to us. We've been speaking to Val Gonzalez and Jamie Ulick of Terra Studios.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you very much, Peter.
The National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis features exhibits and artifacts pertaining to the civil rights movement across the U.S.
But it's not only a museum, but it's a center. And so it is a living, breathing center that people can understand what's happened in the past, but talk about the present and the future.
In the latest conversations with the Academy, we hear from Connie Lewis Lensing, a board member of the Civil Rights Museum who was also a student of President Bill Clinton when he taught at the University of Arkansas. You can find the program under the Local and Podcast tab at KUAF.com.
The 7th annual Winslow Half Marathon and 5K run will take place September 16th. This run through the Boston Mountains of Northwest Arkansas will end at the Winslow Community Expo Center with music, food, and local vendors. Registration and information at winslowrun.com. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
And one more item I want to mention that's connected to the Fayetteville Roots Festival before we end this edition of Ozarks at Large. Tricycle Farms will host a Fayetteville Roots Festival food recovery brunch Sunday, August 27th from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. The event will include, of course, music from Big Still River from Little Rock. If you're interested in tickets, just search Tricycle Farms on Facebook. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Mount Sherman. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for spending part of your Tuesday with us. We're going to end with music from Fetz Folly. They are a fantastic band. We've had them in the Carver Center for Public Radio a few times. This is music that was recorded inside our building. And you can catch them live Friday night at 6 at Core Brewing in Fayetteville. Then next week, August 23rd, at Mojo's Pints and Pies, also in Fayetteville. They'll be at JJ's Grill on Friday, August 25th. And on Saturday, August 26th, well, they're playing a wedding. So you probably already know whether you can catch them there or not. If you'd like to see their full schedule, and they have dates all the way through fall already, you can go to FetzFolly.com. This is the band recorded inside the Carver Center for Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
My sweet baby, don't you let those teardrops fall. I'm coming home real soon. It's been so long since I have held you in my arms, and it's got me feeling blue. It's been 8 hard weeks on a long and lonely road, hurting in my heels, aching in my soul. Not sure how I'll make it through. This much is true. Girl, I best be getting home to you. Every night I'm dreaming of your pretty face neath the moonlit summer sky. And if I had my way, I would run away right now and be with you tonight. It's been 8 hard weeks on a long and lonely road, hurting in my heels, aching in my soul. Not sure how I'll make it through. This much is true. Girl, I best be getting home to you. On a long and lonely road, hurting in my heels, aching in my soul. Not sure how I'll make it through. This much is true. Girl, I best be getting home.